when it comes to the people, I think you still need people to keep these agents on track, to orchestrate them, to sense check and, you know, make sure that there's the human in the loop. So I think this will help our teams take this on a bit more, but also I think help them feel really confident about their role in an AI-led marketing work. This is Revenue Makers, the podcast by Sixth Sense, investigating successful revenue strategies that pushed companies ahead.
Saima Rashid.
Adam Kaiser.
This is a milestone episode, another milestone in a list of long milestones in our podcasting career. You realize what it is, right?
I love that you said we have a podcasting career. I'm just going to take that.
We've been doing this for a while. Come on. We have been doing this for a long time.
All right. What's the milestone?
75th episode.
Dang. I never thought we'd hit 75 this quickly, I guess. It seems to have really just come out of nowhere. 75 is a milestone. Do you have any like pop culture stats to put it into perspective?
So, you know what I actually did? I turned to my dear friend and advisor on such things, ChatGPT, who I now is just at this point, my friend. And I believe that ChatGPT has gone wrong, hallucinated. But I was curious about shows, television shows specifically, that had gone 75 episodes exactly. And why I thought about that, I don't really know. But there is a show called Animal Kingdom that was on TNT, which they claim to have 75 episodes.
Okay.
And then this next one I know is wrong, but I'm going to bring it up because it's funny and it probably will just give us as a Fuller House. So not Full House. You remember Full House? I'm going to be real. I watched Fuller House and it was like I was nauseated that I was watching it.
Did you enjoy it?
It was so horribly bad. I was uncomfortable, but it was almost like
I feel better that you didn't enjoy it because
like I was doing penance for some sort of thing, but I did watch it. And this is saying I had 75 episodes, which
there's no way. Hey, you can't trust ChatGPT for everything. And it does hallucinate. I don't think it had 75 episodes. Full House, of course, probably had more than 75, or maybe they're including Full House in this.
Now I'm wondering, because I'm going over here to a little Wikipedia, and you know what? It's right.
They were Fuller that many House episodes. Had 75.
Fuller House. I don't believe it. Season one, 13 episodes. Season two, 13 episodes. Then it goes 18. So now we're at 26. We're at 44. Yeah. Wow.
Wow.
So we stand in company with Fuller House.
Gosh. I'm a little depressed, Adam, but let's pick it up here. There's a kind of a big, kind of prolific history there. What were some of the standout episodes for you?
Well, I mean, Seth Godin.
Of course.
Was in that 25 since 50. Because we did this at 50. We talked about the first 50, right?
Yep.
But like we got to talk to Seth Godin. And was that just not bucket list at this point? I think you even posted about it as calling it bucket list.
It is a bucket list moment. And I think I'm just going to say that the timing of that episode, given the Gen AI shift that's happening within marketing specifically, I thought that he did such a beautiful job of bringing it back to
people,
the basics and the people and owning the market and what really matters. And then, of course, how to incorporate Gen AI and how to take advantage of it. But something really just great about the two episodes that we did with Seth that I have gone back and actually listened to.
What a lovely human. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and also there were a couple email interactions I think you had, and then I had some afterwards when doing some logistics on like photos and all that. And like, and then he said, like, you guys did a great job, a little self-congratulatory, but I'm like, all right.
I think the quote was, you both are very good at this, which I will take that as a higher accolade than being equivalent to Fuller House.
Well, hold on. I mean, you're right. I would absolutely go with Fuller House.
All right. So yes, Seth was a milestone, memorable episode. I think there was a really great episode on alignment, but like not just, oh, we need to be aligned sales and marketing, but really specific, just takeaway strategies, like a human centric approach to sales and marketing is I think what we had called it.
Yes.
It was with Leah Davidson.
That one was really good.
So good. I walked away from that episode with tangible things that I am using in my real life. Case in point being, let's not call it sales and marketing. Let's talk about the people on those teams and how we relate to them.
And honestly, like going into that, I was like, okay, sales and marketing alignment's kind of, you've beaten it over and over again, but like it just had a different feel, a different approach that I was a big fan of that one for sure.
Yeah. All right. One more.
I would say actually what was really interesting too was Tricia Gelman from Box was talking about kind of, you know, everyone's sort of like talking about, we got to expand our TAM. We got to go here. We got to grow. We got to go there. Like they did this massive, and this was like basically file storage in the cloud company that's done this massive pivot again because of AI and made a huge growth of their TAM and all that. And it's had a huge impact on their business. I mean, she's a great, I mean, she's a, you know, multi-time CMO, but I just thought it was like taking a moment in time, which I mean, AI to a sense is like a moment in time, at least in terms of new, how people are thinking, how things are changing, and then just like completely transforming that business and where they're spending their time, their roadmap, everything. And then getting it from that level, from a TAM expansion, I thought was really great too.
Yeah. And again, something that probably every listener can go out there and start to think about and quantify and do something about. So yay for 75. Now, I'm going to pivot for a second because I think you and I are uniquely positioned to talk a little bit about what's on the mind of the CMO. Obviously, I run marketing for Sixth Sense, but I think the more important piece is I talk to CMOs every single day, at least once a day, most often multiple times a day. These are customer and prospect CMOs. You do the same. I think you have pretty much an equivalent number of customer prospect calls. It's kind of part of our job at this point. Themes start to emerge. Outside of that, of course, with CMO Coffee Talk, which we have twice a week, two times on Friday, it's a community of 4,000 CMOs where we bring important topics and discussions. So we're uniquely positioned to have a pulse on what people are talking about now.
Yes.
And so I'd love to go deep on one or two of those topics. Let's start with the big one. Ready? Zero-click search.
Oh, that little nut. Okay. So yeah, I mean that for anyone out there, right? Again, there's a confluence of things, right? We have just sort of the rise of all of the AI, Claude, ChatGPT, Perplexity, all of these tools now pulling in live search and doing so in such a way where a lot of times it's, you're getting an answer, it's coming in and you may or may not go any further to an actual website of where that content's from. Added together with our friends at Google doing AI overviews where they're pulling in answers essentially, right, from various sources through the index. And then now Google's AI mode, it's not yet, but probably going to take over search completely. And all of this happening, everyone is like, we're seeing massive drop-offs in traffic, but we're seeing increases in impressions because your content is showing up in different ways where you're like, you're getting pulled in, you're in an overview, you're able to understand like your brand is coming up, but not necessarily leading into traffic. So it's like everything's on fire in terms of like, well, what's SEO look like in the future? How do I start to create content for this new world of LLM searches? And like that seems to be hot for just not obviously CMOs, but everyone down. It's interesting. It's scary too, again, but.
Well, let me hit you with two stats. 58% of all Google searches now end without a click. That is terrible. Now the majority, 58%. Yeah. Ahrefs saw that, yes, while AI-generated traffic, meaning the traffic coming directly from these LLMs, is small, it actually makes up only 0.5% of their total traffic, it drove 12.1% of their new user signups. So a 23x higher conversion rate than traditional SEO or traditional organic search. So it's small in terms of what it is driving for us, but it is meaningful in terms of outcomes. But yeah, 58% of all Google searches end without a click.
There's sort of like these two schools, I think, that have of approach in terms of like, how do you adapt to this world? Is SEO dead? Is there a new type of, you know, GEO and AEO and other acronyms? There is a decent amount of things that have emerged as like, these are definitely things that you need to be doing to ensure, and a lot of it's technical, but like auditing your site, understanding, making sure that you're using schema markup to indicate the type of content it is. Think about like the biggest thing to sort of take away from this, one of them, at least with like these LLM searches, is that they're not looking for words or phrases. They're looking for like chunks of like answering a question, right? So if you go and you're searching in one of these things, content that's sort of like almost bite-sized within longer form that can address questions is certainly helpful. There's this concept now, I think on most of these engines, called fan out query, where like when I search for like, you know, what is the best B2B podcast, it's actually going to go and look at derivatives, other questions of that, four or five different kind of questions that could be like, well, if the searcher is looking for this, these might be related. So they use those, like that fan out process, to sort of answer and create an answer again, because what it's doing is it's creating those answers by pulling in all those different content. So again, like that sort of chunking of the content is getting big as well. But I also think that it's still early days in the sense that, yes, they're capturing a lot of mind share. Yes, they're capturing some of this traffic, but like regular SEO is not going away tomorrow. It's changing. You still need to keep yourself concerned about traditional organic rankings. And there is some overlap in the sense that the type of content that you can create to help you with your SEO rankings will do well, or help you at least on the LLM and the AI search type of thing. And I think there's still a lot of questions that are unanswered. I think it was maybe just a week or two ago, there was a search evangelist at Google that he said, like, there's no difference. Do your SEO, which I don't think Google's trying to like do any sort of like tactics of fending people off. But that one is counter to what a lot of people are seeing. But I guess if you take it specific to what Google is doing, that if you're ranking well in Google, will you see better results in their AI overviews and in their AI mode? And they continue to test other forms now. I think it still remains to be seen. People should be, CMOs especially, like obviously need to know what's going on. I have to be thinking about content strategy with their leadership and their content leaders. But it's like, start heading in that direction. But again, Google still has a massive amount of market share for traditional search.
Yeah. You hit on content, right? And what we're seeing, and I think because we're so deep in account-based marketing in the ABM world, a lot of the good habits from there do translate, because it is about obviously having the right content, but we've always prioritized precision of that content over very broad reach. That means going persona specific, answering real business needs, questions and answer type formats, right? Intent-based messages at the right time to the right person. But I think also we've really done a lot of work to focus on brand consistency across platforms, right? You want that digital footprint to be consistent so that it is more likely to be cited by the LLMs. But I'd say if we had to boil it down, I think step one is obviously continuing to just do what you're doing on traditional SEO, right? Ensure your pages are crawlable, you've got metadata complete and accurate, you've got good links. And then beyond that, it becomes, you should be ungating your content as much as possible. You should be creating new content that is persona-based and buying stage-based. You should be republishing that and distributing it across a variety of platforms.
Yeah, I mean, the ungating argument, I think it's over now. Sure, if you just don't want people to see your content, period, across these other channels. And actually, going back to what you said about brand, I mean, that's hugely important as well, right? Because if you're being cited, if you're showing up in the press, all these different places, like it's showing credibility, and these systems and the AI searches especially are picking up on that. So what's really kind of cool is that the importance of brand is, again, it's funny, we go on these tangents in marketing, right? Where it's like, oh, it's all about performance and measurement, and we have to be able to measure everything. And it's like, oh, well, brand is important. And then you have this whole brand to demand movement that sort of happened, where like brand is driving demand. But again, now it's like brand is driving these GEO or whatever we're calling it, because like, you're better, your brand is positioned, to your point, those citations, those mentions are all going to help you there. So I know Sixth Sense years ago had this thing that ABM is just good marketing. And it's sort of like, not all of this, but some of this is just good marketing and good PR and all those things. And of course, all the other technical and the content creation side as well. But I think it's, everyone just take a breath. And it's a time to innovate, and it's a time to experiment. Another trend, this one, which again, like how B2B marketers are using AI in their world is important and has been talked about for a while. But the latest trend is like building an org chart with all your agents, which is both cool and disturbing to me at the same time.
I know. We're living in that kind of a reality where what was normal yesterday is not normal today. And you had a great conversation, speaking of the last 75, with Rachel from Simpro about how she did enhance and augment her marketing team with AI agents.
That one was really good. That was only the second time in 75 episodes that I did an episode without you. So it didn't totally fall apart, thankfully. But yeah, she was a really good example of a marketer and a CMO that wasn't like, oh, well, AI could do this. It could take us here. It's like, no, this is what we're doing. This is how we're doing it. It was like a real world example of like agents in play, things that were happening. And if you go back to that episode, everything that she talked about still came back to her people and kind of making them better, hitting time to value faster on workflows, like impacting those metrics and KPIs that are going to impact the business most. And I think that's, AI is not, it's not about doing more for the sake of doing more, right? It's doing more of those things faster that are going to drive the most value. And so she talked a lot about that. But again, these org charts, and you now you're hearing about like the one thing is like soon there's going to be the $1 billion company with one person in it because of AI. I think, I don't know, but CMOs are talking about, I mean, if you look on CMO Coffee Talk, we have the Slack channel. Like it's like every 5 minutes there's a discussion about automating a workflow or how I'm going to do this and how to do that. So incredibly important. But the transition from the AI GEO SEO thing was there is so much that you can do. Like literally, like why am I not coming up in ChatGPT search? Ask ChatGPT. Yeah. Yeah. And then being able to scale, literally generative AI, like the first use case was content creation, right? I think no doubt. But scaling content creation against these kind of new types of content types and all that technical content optimization that we talked about is huge and will help there. But I said, I'm still not sure how I feel about people actually literally putting agents on the org chart.
Agents on the org chart. Listen, this might be our first disagreement.
Well, let's go. Are we going to fight now?
Not going to fight you. Although I did was we were just before we hit record, I threw in a Rocky IV reference.
I think we've talked about Rocky IV, but we both have a very, very strong affinity for Rocky IV, which in my mind might be the greatest film ever made, but continue.
There you go. I think agents have a place on the org chart. And I'll tell you why. Even if it's just for that mind shift of this is not negotiable anymore. This is not a fun, like, oh, let's tinker with AI over here, or let's test something. This is now part and parcel of how we do work. And I think especially for CMOs looking to set that trajectory for their teams, I think agents on the org charts make sense. And I think there's a couple of ways to do it, right? Number one, you could do an internal hackathon or have like a, you know, an AI day where every individual team starts to come up with one or two or three use cases, which, by the way, don't have to happen overnight. You can build towards them. But to get people to start to think about how to incorporate agents to solve and support for things within their function, I think the agents on the org chart help with that. We at Sixth Sense have put on what we call our monthly AI lunch and learn, where we've got different people from different teams coming and showing and sharing how they're using it. I think that helps with ideation. I think if you set the KPI, if you set that trajectory and put them on the org chart, it will almost be a forcing function to drive adoption and innovation. I think you and I both agree, though, when it comes to the people, I think you still need people to keep these agents on track, to orchestrate them, to sense check and, you know, make sure that there's the human in the loop. So I think this will help our teams take this on a bit more, but also I think help them feel really confident about their role in an AI-led marketing work.
No, you're right. I think the AI, it also sends a message about, like you said, like this is no longer optional. AI fluency. And then also, like, you know, the world has changed. Like, you're not like, oh, we need to do X. Like, oh, we hire somebody. Like, I mean, again, we've beaten into the ground that growth at all costs is over. And again, like, efficiencies are there and all that. And then, you know, how are you going to solve X challenge? The first place you're going to go now is going to be likely going to be AI. So I think that it's a fair assessment. To make your teams like not feel like somebody's coming for their job is obviously a challenge. But again, like, it's going to be on not just leadership, but on them to continue to push, ask for either it's resources or time, or give them time to go and just sort of run projects, skunk work projects. And then I don't think there's enough top-down initiatives probably across companies for like full on. It has to graduate out of Skunkworks and tinkering. The very best companies are doing that, but I think there's a long way to go to, like, there is a company-wide AI initiative and we are going to lead the company and all the departments are going to have access to resources to do that. I think that is something that needs a little bit more thought and, like, office of, like, whether we're going to see chief AI officers or coming out of CIO. I mean, there's all sorts of different places it could do. Then things are going to get really interesting because this is, like, table stakes across the entire business.
Adam Kaiser.
Yes.
It's been a lot of fun doing 75 episodes with you. I think there's no one in the world I would have rather done it with. I think we've had so much fun. I think we've put together some great episodes and some great topics. So thank you for 75 episodes of Revenue Makers.
Thank you. And yeah, I couldn't think of anyone else to do it with. And it's actually, you know, you and I have this conversation every so often. It's like, I don't, it's 75 and you look back at them and you, like, you read an episode and you guess, and we're talking about, you know, 30 plus hours of recordings and just so much, so rich. And, like, we've just been through, like, incredibly busy times.
There's podcast episodes where we go back and we look and we're like, oh, that was a bad week. And you can see it on our faces. We have
that was actually one in the last 25, which I actually didn't think so bad. And then not long after, we were like, Adam, we look like shit. And I was like, whoa. Thank you for the inspiration. No, there's definitely, you look at when it was recorded.
I also looked like shit. Don't worry. We both did.
I had high hopes that we would do this for a while. But we're at this now. We recorded our cool trailer in December of 2023.
Wow.
And here we are more than halfway through 2025.
Well, happy 75, Adam.
Thank you. Happy 75.
You've been listening to Revenue Makers.
Do you have a revenue project you were asked to execute that had wild success? Share your story with us at sixthsense.com/revenue. We might just ask you to come on the show. And if you don't want to miss the next episode, be sure to follow along on your favorite podcast app.